ladies, humans, gentleladies, ladmen, ladies and gentlemen, dreamers and dreams alike, and welcome to the Devolver Digital Forecast here at forecast.devolverdigital.com. Hi, I'm your co-host, JM.
And I'm Jared. Gonna have to get used to that.
That's right. I think I also said dreamers.
Dweembers.
So, dweembers. We're changing it up today. How you doing, Jared?
Oh, I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm doing all right. Hard to get up these days.
Oh, I feel that. Definitely yeah. Feel that.
Been up to anything interesting or fun?
Well, I don't know about fun, but I am in the process of moving, which is the opposite of fun, but definitely interesting.
Yeah.
So, if you could see my place right now, it's a total mess. It's awful.
And that's different?
Yeah, it's not an organized mess.
There's
boxes and things like that around instead of like comic books and porno mags and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a shift. That's a shift for sure. Well, nice. Well, I hope it's going well. I hope you're giving yourself enough time to do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely... that's one of the things I got lucky with is I don't have to do like a immediate turnaround, like, you know, get there and get out of this old place within a day or so. So been giving myself, you know, taking it nice and easy, making it as stress free as possible.
Nice. That's the way I like to do it if I have the opportunity.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, it was when I moved into this house, I was doing that, but there was a certain threshold where I was like, I just want this to be over now. Like, I took too long. I took a little too long with it.
Oh, I feel that. I've got to the point where, like, most of the stuff is over at the new place, except for a lot of the big furniture.
Yeah.
So I'll be, you know, like, looking for something. I'm like, where the hell did I put the... Oh, yeah. Not here. That sucks.
Yeah. Are you at the knick-knack stage? Like, where all the little things that's the hardest part of packing for me, at least. It's like all the things that I'm like, what are you?
Where did I get this? Or, oh, that's where that went. My cat really loves to play with, like, the corks that come on, like champagne or sparkling wine bottles or whatever.
Cute. So what's your cat's name?
Lucy.
Aw,
Lucy. And so every time I always get... like a Prosecco or champagne or something like that. I always like pop the cork and I like toss it to her and she likes to bat around with it. But it inevitably loses it somewhere. I have found like 8 corks in this house.
At least you can throw those away, right?
Sure, yeah. I was like, man, I forgot how many of these were just thrown about the place.
Cat, you are a drunk.
You've been hiding these from me, girl.
Yeah. I feel like it's easier to pack at the beginning when you've got, like, the categories. You're like, all right, kitchen appliances. All right, books. All right, clothes. All right. And then you start getting into the more obscure, niche, weird items that you're like, what is this? Is this art? Is this knickknacks? Is this bric-a-brac? Is this... And I'm going to use that to segue into today's topic.
Perfect.
Because our topic today is we're going to talk about, so we wanted to introduce Jared to the world and give Jared a chance to kind of talk about, you know, who he is and just have a session where we talk about video games. We haven't had one of those in a while. Do some lists. So we're going to talk about genres that we really enjoy. And Jared's thought that we would get very specific with our genres.
Yeah, I kind of took it in a couple different directions. I went like some specific genres, some overall styles, and just like eras of certain types of genre. But we'll see as we go down
sure.
the list.
Yeah, yeah. Get ready for a list episode.
Woo-hoo!
Do you want to go first, or shall I go first?
I can go first. I guess it was my idea,
okay.
So sure. So
yeah, hit it.
The first one that I want to talk about, and this is mainly an excuse to get me to talk about two games that I really, really love and play a lot, are like either hardcore or realistic first-person shooters. first person shooters are definitely a dime a dozen, you know, and I certainly do have fun with the run and gun, you know, like Shadow Warrior or Doom or something like that. But ones that are very kind of technical and sort of methodical, more like what a legitimate gunfight would be, I don't know. I really like it. There's something about it. And the two games that I was talking about earlier that I really love are Hunt Showdown and Escape from Tarkov, which I play a lot, despite the fact that I cuss a lot and scream a lot, which looks like I'm not having any fun when I play them. But they are both fantastic. And both very different kind of examples of it, because Hunt Showdown is set in kind of like an Old West environment. Yeah. I know you're familiar with it, because we used to play back in the day, but...
I was very bad at it.
I still am. I'm like hundreds of hours into playing that, and I still suck. But it's really cool. What I like about that is the guns being old and kind of shitty on purpose, making, you know, like a lot of guns being only one shot before you have to reload. So gun fights are, I live in Texas. I have lots of gun thoughts, a lot more, you know, calculated. And then on the whole opposite end, Escape from Tarkov. Are you familiar with that at all?
No.
So that one is more of a military shooter, but that, Jesus Christ, that is like the most realistic gun game I think I've ever seen. Almost in a way that makes it somewhat not fun, but just the, whenever you get into the gunfights and all that, it's great. It's like you gotta know your stuff about your guns. So that one you go into a round, and you have a certain amount of money, so you go to the different traders, you buy whatever guns or armor or whatever you want. But say you buy a gun, well, it's not going to come with any ammo.
Okay.
So you got to buy ammo, but the ammo is not, you know, machine gun ammo, shotgun ammo. It's actual calibers of bullets, so you have to know what's compatible with the gun. Do you want a different, you want a magazine with it, you have to know what's compatible with it, and... there's all kinds of attachments you can build up your gun. There's a section called the gunsmith, so you can make really wacky builds, but it's just really neat. HUD, you know, no feedback whether you kill somebody unless you watch them go down. You know, if you get shot in the leg and it happens to hit like an artery, you better have a tourniquet on you or you're going to bleed to death. Like really, really, really insane, but hard as nails, but I don't know. There's something about it. Maybe I'm a masochist, but I love it.
You? A masochist?
No.
No. Nice. Cool.
So yeah, that's like my realistic first one.
Gun sim.
Yeah, and there's, I think, like, a more popular example that people might be familiar with is, like, the Rainbow Six series.
Yeah.
Which is really great, but I wanted to specifically mention those two games because they are, like, of the people who are kind of, I think people who like this kind of genre are familiar with those two, but I think they deserve a little more love.
Nice. Yeah, for sure. Sweet.
And that's my one.
My first genre that I really like, I'm gonna not do my obvious ones yet, but I like math games.
Okay.
I like games where a lot of math gets involved. Mm-hmm. And that can be something like a deck builder. Like what made me think of it is that I was playing Monster Train.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so like Slay the Spire and Monster Train, you know, where you've got these cards and you're doing math on like, you know, what these different effects do. And the games do a lot of the math for you. But I like math and probability stuff. And I think that's, you know, pretty popular across a lot of games. Slay the Spire is, you know, a shining example of how gameplay, if you've got solid gameplay, it doesn't matter if your game looks like dog shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people will play it and love it. And I mean, I played it and I loved it. I played so much Slay the fucking Spire. And it's just so good. Like, it's like, cool. They did whatever art they could do and it's fine. Good for them. But that gameplay loop was just so strong and it just felt so cool, good. And you watch all these different effects and you calculate, and you try to predict ahead as much as you can. And then kind of the other end of that is games like, Guess Your Grace. I don't know if you remember that one.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It was kind of a narrative game where you are a king and you've got to make these decisions for your kingdom, and you've got like it was kind of similar to like in visual style and kind of narrative quality. It was similar to Gods Will Be Watching, in that it's a pixel art game. Yeah, and it had these things, and it has a story, and you're trying to like you've got to make allies and prepare your kingdom for a battle, and you've got to make sure that you've got enough resources, and you've got to balance your morality with your, with all this stuff. And I watched my partner at the time play through a lot of it, and I started itching to like have a go at it, and so then I took a turn, and it was, yeah, I just like the math games. I like math and like kind of figuring out like there's just a part of my brain that just sinks into it, and like I don't consciously do any of it. Like the front of my brain is not super involved in it. But like as I was watching her play, and then when I started to play, like I was like, oh yeah, these are the decisions I need to make early on. And so I played the game, and it was really funny because like you get to like your first battle, and I had just overwhelming numbers, and I had every like, they had like certain units, and you're supposed to send a certain unit to foil their unit. I had all the correct units. I had tons of money and tons of soldiers. I had tons of everything, and basically the narrative was written that you were like they thought they were making a very, very hard game, and so like the narr there was no narrative version. Like so there, it's like you fight the battle, and then an avalanche happens, and like kind of kills both armies. And so everyone's like, "Wow, whoo, thank goodness that avalanche saved us, huh?" Like we almost, I was like, "No, man, we were winning by a lot. God damn it! Like at least acknowledge that."
We were kicking ass, man.
We're kicking ass. And I'm not always, I'm not always great. I definitely, have bad runs in those kinds of games and stuff like that. But yeah, there's just something that just it's just I mean it really scratches an itch just to do math, just to have math going on and to be like calculating like what's gonna work and what's not. And yeah. So really, really mathy games are my first genre.
Do you play like a card, like I say card games, but I mean like more like actual holding cards, like deck building games. Do you play many of those?
No, I mean, I used to, so I never had, oh, I remember we talked about this. Robbie went out and bought the custom, the Star Trek customizable card game or whatever. I had bought a lot of those. I bought all the Star Wars ones. I never got into Magic.
Yeah, same here.
So, and I bought those games, but I never had a lot of opportunities to play them. I played like one or two games with my friends, but it never was really a thing that we did a lot of. There was a really cool game. It was also Star Wars. It came out just after The Phantom Menace, and it was a game, it was like Jedi Duels or something like that. But you would basically have two characters, and they each came with cards, and the other person would have two characters, but there would be like a game board. And so, like, you'd use your cards to move around the board and, like, do attacks and stuff like that. And that one was actually a really cool kind of blend of, and I played a lot of that for a little while, but that was kind of a one-off, board game kind of thing. Yeah, I think that if I really got, it was also just, it always seemed expensive to get into those card
They
games.
definitely are, yeah.
So, like, there's a part of me that would be interested in it, but there's another part of me that is very happy that I haven't put in the time and mental energy to play and get good at those kinds of games.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a really fun one that I play somewhat frequently. It's called Legendary. And it's like a Marvel superhero game, which, like I'm sick of them probably just as much as everybody else. But this game is really great, and it's like a deck builder where you're sort of, building up your own superhero team, but everybody is
Yeah.
playing on a team against like a villain, and you kind of determine the villain ahead of time, whether you're fighting Doctor Doom or Galactus or whoever. And so you all kind of work
Oh.
together to go. And it's pretty neat because you pick a villain and then you pick like the evil scheme, which is basically that has the win conditions for both you and the villain.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. It's really just intuitive, and it's not too complicated, but I quite enjoy it.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Nice. Yeah. I think that might come up for one of my other genres.
well, okay. Yeah, I got some cross pollination between mine, which maybe I'll lead into the next one then, which is less of a genre, more of a setting, but JM, I love the Old West. I love the Old West. I love Old West to everything. And so Old West games is my next one. The obvious choice being Red Dead Redemption, but I mentioned Hunt Showdown earlier, but a throwback would be the game Gun, which I have not played in a very long time, so I don't know if I could talk too much about it, but that game was awesome.
I loved that game.
Also, Oddworld Stranger's Wrath, one of the best games ever.
I need to sit down and play.
You gotta. And it's great because it's definitely Oddworld, and it's, you know, it's quirkiness, but it's, you know, you're a bounty hunter, having to track down these crazy guys, and that game is so inventive, and the way it mixes third person platform and action with first person shooting. And for those who aren't familiar, in that game, your gun is like this crossbow you hold on your arm, and you have like two sort of chambers, so you can have two types of ammunition, but all of the ammunition is living creatures. So you can have like these little skunks, you know, shoot out as like a stink bomb, or like a spider acts as like a thing that'll like wrap the enemies up in webs so you can capture them. And it's got this whole mechanic of like, you know, you if you kill the people, you kind of like, once you collect the bounty, they're worth more alive than dead, but obviously it's harder to capture them alive, so you kind of have to make those snap calls. Especially if you play on a higher difficulty. If you play earlier on, it's kind of easy for most of the bosses to catch them alive, but if you play on hard or something, oh boy. You're like, do I really need that extra gold? Nope, no I do not. But yeah, that game is awesome, and just, I don't know, there's something about like the way everything looks super warm and hot and just kind of inhospitable that I love about the Old West setting.
Yeah.
And just that kind of free-for-all nature, I think, lends itself really well to a lot of stories. Like, you know, anything goes. That was the whole thing about the Wild Wild West. Anything goes.
Yeah.
And even, like, you know, Red Dead is great, too, of just giving you that kind of ability to, like, walk around in a world like that and be totally immersive. I would play, sometimes when I was looking for a game to just kind of relax to, I'd boot up Red Dead 2, and I'd just go hunting, man. I wouldn't do anything. I'd go hunting, I'd go fishing. Like, this is just really nice.
Yeah, I mean, that was... I mean, the story and the acting and stuff is incredible. But, I mean, yeah, they made the world, like, the main character in that game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Did you ever play the original Red Dead? Red Dead Revolver?
Oh, Red Dead. I was like, well, yeah, of course, but Red Dead Revolver. You know what? I never did.
It was weird. It was goofy. It's not at all the other two Red Deads. it was just Rockstar like playing around with an Old West game. And I remember I was playing it at the same time that I was playing a tabletop game called Deadlands, the Weird West. And so it was, there was a lot of parallels in that. But like, it was, like, there was, like, magic and stuff like that. I think some of the bosses, like, had, like through, like, I think they were, like, voodoo-themed bosses and, like, they threw stuff. I don't remember it very clearly. I just remember there was one part where it was, like kind of, like, ooh, spooky, kind of Louisiana thing. But it was a much, much different game. But it was still cool and interesting. And I think they even use a sting from the soundtrack of that game on SpongeBob Like a lot.
What?
I think there's a sting from that game, and I feel like I heard it in SpongeBob like a lot, and it's just, I don't know. If I find it, it'll show up right here. You know, and I never looked it up to confirm it or anything like that. Like that was, you know, when I was, it was not a time when like you just looked anything up on the internet and expected an answer. So,
yeah.
But, like it would just come up and I was like, the fuck, that's why is Red Dead Revolver playing right now?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a very narrative game. It was just like a straight line narrative, and there wasn't nearly as much like goofing off and like wandering around the open world. Like that was very much a Red Dead, you know, redemption thing.
Yeah,
it changed the tone. It got a lot more serious, a lot more grounded. When they went to redemption, but
I would like to point out it took us 19 minutes before we mentioned Rockstar.
Hey.
But you know, you did mention Weird West. Well, you didn't mention that Weird West, but thinking of Weird West, that's another thing. You know, I guess tying into our own games. But yeah, I'm excited about Weird West because I do love that setting, and it, having like a supernatural aspect with it, I think is really, really cool.
Yeah,
I love that. So
yeah,
much like Hunt Showdown, supernatural Old West. But anyway,
yeah, it's really. I mean, I loved Deadlands. It was just really cool. And I mean, the Old West, like, it's, you know, it's funny. So from Deadlands, I learned that there is a huge level of the way that we as Americans have a lot of like fantasy visions of Europe is kind of like a lot of what we like, you know, we project our like fantasy worlds into. Like, it's like, you know, medieval Europe, but magical.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like, there's a lot of, like, in Europe, in a lot of parts of Europe, like, the American West is where they put a lot of that, where they fantasize, because it's an alien world to them. It's a different place for them. So it's kind of their version of, like, you know, our medieval fantasy. So there's a lot of excitement about that. And I mean, they're similar. You know, you've got low population versus wide environment.
Mm-hmm.
You've got tons of folklore and mythology from different cultures blending together. I mean, it's great. It's really perfect. It's a really, you know, and ultimately, like, you know, you've got the elements. You've got just really powerful, especially in the West, like in the American West, like, you know, it's such a big place, and there's just like, mm-hmm, so much, I don't know, like, you know, Monument Valley's, you know, there's so many visually stunning places, but then like the deserts, the floods, the tornadoes, like all this like crazy shit that, you know, is just, it feels magical on its own. So it's really just a very short jump for human beings to be like, magic.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't think about that from like the European standpoint. That would make sense why most of the best classic West movies were made in Italy.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Sorry, I just realized that I didn't have anything about, you know, anything Kurosawa related on my list of genres. Because you said Old West, you know, movies made in Italy. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking about how they are all like a lot, not all, but a lot of those are also like pulled from Japanese samurai films.
Yeah. Well, the Fistful of Dollars, which is the first movie in the trilogy that, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly ended with, is a direct remake of Yojimbo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, kind of funny how that, like, a movie about, like, you know, old school Japan, historical Japan, made by an Italian, set in the Old West, becomes a classic.
I mean, the smart thing they did for that is almost like duplicate it shot for shot.
Oh yeah.
Like the reason that, like, I don't like I think Yojimbo's better, but
I agree. Like
Fistful of Dollars is still good,
mm-hmm.
because it's almost the same movie and story. Magnificent Seven is trash.
Yeah, I never saw it. I never wanted to because I didn't.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Well, you can't touch Seven Samurai, man. You just.
And they made it like it came out like 3 years after Seven Samurai came out. So like there wasn't like, oh, hey, like let's find, like they saw it and were like, okay, let's do that.
Just do
like,
that.
They were
yeah.
like, nobody's going to see this Japanese movie over here. Let's make a Western of it. And it is so dumb. It's so bad. Like they just changed, you know, they do that thing. They just change all this dumb shit for no reason.
Speaking of really bad movies based on Akira Kurosawa films, Star Wars. No, I'm
joking. Oh, shit.
How to lose all of our viewers in one second. I'm totally kidding.
But... How to lose your co-host. Yeah. Click.
Oh, no! I like Star Wars. That was a joke.
Unclick.
Okay, unclick. Oh, hey, thanks for joining the call again.
Hey! Well, since we popped the rock star, we pop rock star up. I'll go ahead and say that one of my favorite niche genres is multiplayer open world, realistic modern day crime sim.
Is there a specific game you could be thinking of by chance?
Getaway.
Oh, fuck! The Getaway was badass.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, you know, games like that I think are really neat. Yeah.
Nice. What about like Mafia, like the original Mafia?
I didn't play enough of that. A friend of mine had it and it looked really cool, and I wish that I played more of it. Because it looked really cool and interesting.
Yeah, I thought...
I like those old-timey cars and shit.
Ooh, yeah.
It's badass. You know what else is cool? Sub Rosa.
Man... Yes, it is.
Sub Rosa is really neat.
That's a, you know, I think to the very first thing I said, more like hardcore shooters, I think you could argue Sub Rosa kind of falls into that category. Because the gunplay is not realistic, but like the how difficult everything is to control and handle, I think plays a lot into it, which is a similar sort of feeling to me anyway.
Yeah. It's not a direct simulation of like, it's not trying to be a direct simulation, but it kind of gets the feel of like the chaos.
Exactly.
Of things. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing about, you know, those games is that like real life gun battles, most people miss most
exactly,
of the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, most shots go wild. If it's two people shooting at each other, like it's really hard to like pop your head out and fucking, you know, mm-hmm. shoot at someone and hit them, like, you know. Yeah, like referring back to Deadlands, so they had a post-apocalyptic version called The Wasted West, and they had a book about, like, you know, they had like the soldier book or whatever, and it was really interesting because it got to fully automatic fire.
Uh-huh.
And the you know, the army guy, the character who was, you know, the narrator of the book kind of giving the information, was like, this is for intimidation purposes only.
Hmm.
Like you don't shoot fully automatic if you're actually trying to hit someone.
Yeah.
You do it like it's suppressive fire. Like you use that to like keep someone's head down. You use that so that they don't, you know, so you use it to fucking terrify people, and then they like in the game they introduce like mechanics for that and stuff like that. And I thought that was really cool and interesting because like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, because if you're firing, you know, fully automatic, it's hard to hit something. So, I mean, you know, it's noisy, the gun's kicking around everywhere,
mm-hmm.
so it's hard for you to actually, like, do anything, but it's fucking terrifying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's funny, because that's totally true. Like, if, you know, like, anybody who's ever fired, like a handgun... And you try to, like, shoot very quickly, you learn how easily you lose control of that damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, trying to lay on, like, a fully automatic or kind of suppressive fire, like, yeah, that totally is just an intimidation thing, because you're not hitting shit.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. So Sub Rosa has that kind of that vibe, like when you start like trying to shoot, you just kind of, you're shooting wild, it's hard to hit, it's hard to get hit, and getting hit sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll end up like hobbling around and stuff. So yeah, open world modern crime sims is my second one.
Nice. All right, so my third also has a sort of crossover with the last one I talked, because there's one game in particular, but I love stealth games. Hiding in the shadows, creeping around, and like the feeling of, you know, like it's definitely a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
But when you pull off whatever it is you're trying to do, I find it so gratifying. And the one that I mentioned, the Old West one, is of course Desperados, which is a series of games. Yeah. But Desperados 3 I recently played. And that's like a tactics stealth game, which is very crazy, but I loved that. And I loved, you know, like, I loved Metal Gear Solid, in particular Metal Gear Solid 3. I played the hell out of that game back in the day. And I liked that one because it was stealth, but it sort of had this, almost like a light survival aspect, kind of before any of that was a thing, because you're mostly in the jungle and you know, you have to treat your wounds or infections and remember to eat and things like that. And
yeah,
having camo to match the environment you were in was just really, really cool. I loved Metal Gear Solid 3, and the story was phenomenal as well. And then I haven't played these in a while, but I wanted to mention it just to give a quick shout out to my dad, because he loved these games, was the Siphon Filter series on the original PlayStation.
Yeah.
Gabe Logan, man, that shit was so fun. And kind of in that same vein, they're also, of course, Splinter Cell.
Yeah. I used to dog on Splinter Cell so hard.
Oh, no.
I was just... because he's got all these lights all over him.
That's true. It is very silly. Like, when you think about it like that, yeah.
Yeah. And there were so many things that that game would, like... I hate it when games are... they inflate the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd have a mission where it's like, all right, you need to do this, you can't fucking kill anybody, you get like 2 stun rounds, all right, go. I'm like, what do you, what?
Because
mm-hmm. obviously they don't want you to just stun everybody or whatever, you know, and just walk through the place. But it just bugged me. I was like, come on, if the narrative objective is for me to not kill people, you want me to get through this thing, not get detected, not kill anybody, like, and you give me like 2 or 3 stun rounds to get through this like fucking like CIA compound, like, come on, man, you're not setting me up for success.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I figured out though that there's a camera you could shoot from your gun to like be able to look around corners.
Yeah.
And if you popped a guy in the head with it, you'd knock him out. And then the camera would like bounce off and stick to the wall. Then you go get the camera and you could just keep doing that.
That's hilarious.
I beat that whole game. My friend had it on Xbox, and I would go over to his place, and I would play it at his place, because, like, I guess I was just better at it. Like, I was getting further in it than he was, so it was just, we would all sit around, and I would just dog on it the whole time.
That's funny.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Another stealth game that I like that's totally different than the ones we've just mentioned, but Sly Cooper.
I never played Sly Cooper.
Mm. So, so good. The first one was all right. Was pretty good. But the second and third one, I think, are just awesome. Because it's super beautiful, cartoony, and just... It has, like... I feel like if the word hijinks could be directly turned into a video game, it would be Sly Cooper. Because... It's just so fun. Like, it's sort of separated into different levels, which are... And I'm primarily talking about the second and third one, because I think this is when they really got their stride. Different areas, and there's some kind of goal you're trying to do, some kind of heist you're trying to pull. And so you have all of these missions that you need to do beforehand, which are going to be your setups. So, like, going and, you know, doing some reconnaissance, you know, planting this thing or setting this thing up. All the while, you know, you're sneaking around and trying to find that. And then once you end up doing all the setups, you pull off the main thing. And it just feels so great to have it all come together Like, you see your plan come together, but then they always do the Scooby-Doo thing where it always fails. So you have to, like, you know, like, the plan never works. So you have to adapt on the fly. And it's just, it was so fun. Like, just being able to kind of, like, you know, and you always had a hideout and you felt like, you know, you're sneaking around. It genuinely, in a similar way to, like, you know, when we play, like, Grand Theft Auto online and we are doing, you know, like, we're going to go rob the casino and we got to do these setups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It had a very similar feel to that, but way more Saturday morning cartoon. And
oh, that's awesome.
Damn, I loved it. And it's just super sad. So Sly Cooper, like, he has, like, this, like, a cane with kind of, like, a hook thing on the end of it. And you get the ability, like, if you sneak up close enough to people, you can pick their pockets with it. And, like, that was so satisfying to, like, sneak up to this big-ass dude, and you're just, like, pulling gold out of his pocket with your hook. that was so, so fun.
That sounds great. I don't have heist games in here. There's not a whole ton of heist games, but heists are such a cool thing to get to do.
I love it because it's like I was mentioning before, that idea of, like, we're gonna do this, like, here's all of these little, like, I love that setup and doing these little missions and then pulling it off, and whenever it, whether it goes perfectly like how you planned, then it's super satisfying, or if all shit hits the fan and you got to improvise, that's still really fun.
I like the option of it actually being able to go well. Sure.
Of course,
but I mean, if you're in a single player game like Sly Cooper, then I guess, you know, they got to keep the story.
Yeah.
I have a thought on a heist game on a, you know, and this is from playing GTA online, and, you know, the heists, you've got your prep missions, and you can have, like, a team of people and stuff like that. But you do one prep mission, then another prep mission, then another prep mission, then you do the big mission, and, you know, you have your team of people and you do it. I really wish there was a way, like, I would love to see a heist mechanic, a heist game kind of thing, where you have, like, maybe a limited amount of time, or the amount of time that you do your prep, like, gives you a bonus to, like, how much money you can get, or, like, oh, this particular asset is only here for the next 12 hours or whatever. And so it would be a thing where you split your team up to do different prep jobs all at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that's what's always really thrilling and exciting about, like, heist movies and stuff like that is, you know, like, this person's over here, like, setting this up. And if they, you know, get the timing wrong, then this other person's thing doesn't quite work. And they had attempted that early in GTA where they would, like, you have to have four people. And these two people are going over here to do this mission. And these two people are going over here to do this mission. If anybody fails, the whole mission fails. And that kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite like that. It's more of a just everybody's got a job to do. We've got a limited amount of time to get all the jobs done. But that kind of, like, gives us a bonus and sets us up for greater success. I just think that would be cool.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think that the early GTA heists tried to emulate that. But it was always wildly uneven. Like, this guy can fly the plane and wait for everybody to extract while these three people break into the prison and extract them. You're like, oh, shit, who drew the short straw this time?
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, what was I going to say? Oh, so Sly Cooper is a single-player game, but it had a similar feeling where, like, everybody's doing, like, the different prep missions, but you would bounce back and forth, so you'd play as, like, different characters.
Cool.
The finale, so everything is sort of happening at once, but you get to see it from all the different angles, and that was always just really satisfying.
So that has the vibe of the movie then, like the heist movies.
Yes,
then. That's really cool. I always liked Assassin's Creed 1 and 2.
I played Assassin's Creed, and then I played Assassin's Creed 2 and Assassin's Creed 2-2 and Assassin's Creed 2-3, and then I stopped.
I need to play 2-2 and 2-3, I guess. I only played 2-1 of the twos.
I liked them. I remember...
Yeah.
And it's funny, because I hear, like, some of the newer ones are supposed to be really good, but I dropped off after this... after the third, second one, because they just started to get very samey to me.
I don't really care for a lot of the new ones. 3 was not super great. Like, they keep putting them in places where there's not a lot of high places to get to. And it's like, what? The whole point is that I'm parkouring around an urban environment. Like, 3 was weird. I played the Black Sails 4, like the pirate one, yeah. Pirate ships. And that was okay. That was pretty fun for a while. And maybe if I went back to it, I'd enjoy it more, because it wasn't quite what I was expecting. And then I didn't play the Egypt one. I didn't play the Greece one, even though I hear those are supposed to be huge and great. I watched a little bit of my friend playing the Viking one. They just kind of, they're very open world adventure games.
Yeah, now, that's what they seem like now.
Which is not really what I ever wanted from an Assassin's Creed. Like, I wanted an open world environment, yeah, but I really wanted, I don't know, it's not quite what I, I fell off of them as well. But I used to try into, like, I was always like, all right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do the stealth, I'm going to get the kill. I almost never pulled it off. It always ended up me, like, fighting my way out.
Yeah.
But it was fun that you could do it either way. Like, it was, you know, I like being able to succeed or fail. And then, you know, I really love a game that lets my fail state continue the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really, like, that's a more interesting story to me than a lot of things where it's like, oh, you failed this one thing. Like, this character has to have done everything perfectly all along, except for where we narratively make the boss get away, even though you clearly just killed them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. My next genre is kind of similar to what we've been talking about a little bit here and there. Co-op PvE.
Oh, yeah.
Deep Rock Galactic made me think of that. There's just so many... And it's an emerging genre these days, I think, where like people like working together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember the first time I saw Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time at a convention, and I was like, oh, this is wonderful. This is so cool. This is so cute and fun, and we get to work together. Yeah, co-op PvE.
Yeah, I miss like the old couch co-op days, and so I'm glad that there's more and more of that seeming to start come back. It's online a lot of times. Well, sometimes not, but because I used to play like when I was younger, my brother and I, that was like the games we played the most were the ones where we could play together, and so a lot of the best gaming memories I have are, you know, not necessarily the best games, but we got to play them together, like. Splinter Cell Chaos Theory had like a exclusive co-op campaign, and I remember thinking that was the coolest thing, because I don't remember a game that usually co-op was just you're playing the single player, also there's another guy here, you know, but
yeah,
having something specifically designed around that. And I just remember it seems so simple now, but in that there was like certain ledges you couldn't reach, so one person had to go and like boost the other one up. And then the other one would pull them up. Just something like that. We're like, man, like we have to work together to get there. That is so cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, and we need to play Deep Rock Galactic, because I have yet to play it.
It's so good. It's one of the best games like ever. And it's such an interesting one because, you know, you have these missions, like your objective is to mine this mineral or to gather this whatever. There's a variety, like they've done a really great job of making like a variety of missions, and the environments all feel different, but it's so wonderful because the combat in the game is an obstacle to your objective, and the combat is fun and it's exciting, but it's never the point. And I think that's just a really amazing thing that they managed to do. Like, you don't get a lot of experience for fighting the bugs. And there's a genuine feeling of like, get these fucking bugs out of my way. I'm trying to mine right now.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
And it's so good. Oh, it's such a great game. And they fucking knocked it out of the park.
And don't correct me if I'm wrong, but in that there's like, you play as different characters that kind of specialize in different things. So you sort of have to work together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Really like that.
Yeah, there's four different classes, and they all have different, like, weapons, and they also have a different, like, traversal utility. The engineer can create platforms. The gunner has, like, a zipline gun that sets up, like, a permanent zipline that everybody can use. Everyone can dig through anywhere in the environment, almost anywhere in the environment with their pickaxe. But the driller has these like big double drills and can just fucking bore a tunnel through the wall like super fast, and that's incredible. And this sounds weird, but the scout's main like group traversal mechanic is being able to set up flares that stick to the wall and light up the room. And at first that sounds like the least effective one, mm-hmm. but that game is so dark, and like you have a little flashlight in front of you and you throw flares, and that's how you see. Like if you don't have those on, it's fucking black.
Yeah.
Like cool. stuff glows phosphorescently and reflects light and stuff, but like what light you have is the light you have. So being able to set up flares, especially when there's like a big combat situation, is shockingly helpful and wonderful. And I miss on a team, because the scout is the kind of the hardest to play, because they can get themselves killed pretty easily, because they have like a zip gun, like a grappling hook that they can use to get to high places, and it's very easy to get yourself into a place that you can't safely get down from. So there's not a lot of scouts, but yeah, being able to light up the room. Anyway, it's a great game, really well thought out, really well done.
Nice. Well, we'll definitely, we need to play it soon, because I hear nothing but great things. But co-op PvE, I feel like we have to talk about Left 4 Dead, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Like,
the co-op PvE game.
Yeah. So many pretenders, and none of them come close.
Yeah. That game... I don't know. Just so good.
Yeah. So clean.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah. Perfect. Even the new one that came out, made by the same people, and you know, people are like, oh, the original,
oh,
and the copy,
yeah, Back
like,
for Blood,
it was made by the same people, dummy. Yeah, Back for Blood, made by the same people, dummy. Wrong. And it's like, this is not nearly as good as Left 4 Dead. Yeah. This is not as good as the game you made 10 years ago.
Have you played much of Back for Blood?
I played a bit.
Okay, yeah, I'm playing it somewhat, and I think same thing. It's like if you think this is Left 4 Dead 3, you are going to be disappointed. But it's still, I think it's still good fun.
Yeah, it's good fun. I mean, there's plenty of, like, Aliens Fire Team Elite came out,
sure,
and that was good fun. I mean, there's a lot of games that, you know, again, they're fun. They try to do the thing, but it's just...
You can never be Left 4 Dead.
None of them are the thing. Yeah. Well, they always... It's weird. They always want to complicate it. They always want to add something new and exciting and interesting to the formula. And... I think that ends up being the downfall.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Left 4 Dead was very simple, and that, I think, worked in its benefit.
Yeah, it's simple, and that's like the, yeah, there's no nuanced mechanics. You don't have to figure out which cards you're doing, which difficulty modifiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't have to like do a lot of stuff to understand the basic gameplay. You just got to know that when you hear a woman crying, you are in very serious fucking danger.
Turn your flashlight off now.
Turn your flashlight off.
That's one thing. So the Back 4 Blood doesn't really have this in the way that Left 4 Dead did. And Left 4 Dead, I think, did it so perfectly that it forced you to be cooperative, but not in a way that felt forceful. Like all of those special infected would just, you know, immobilize you if you ran off on your own. And the sound cues, like whenever you hear that, you hear those piano notes, you're like, oh, fuck. Like, where's my team? I got to get, because I know what's about to happen. Or you hear like the you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
The smoker. Mm-hmm. Like, get away.
fuck.
Yeah. Such great sound design.
Oh, like, I mean, yeah, everything about that game was just so, it was, I don't know, like the word like that just came out, Zen is not the correct word, but it's whatever that concept is where you just shave away everything that is not essential to the experience.
I also appreciate that it's got like mod support via the Steam Workshop, because I've definitely had some fun with some buddies like putting up some mods, and there's one that just turns all the zombies into Zoidberg. And they like it, at first it's really funny, but then imagine like hundreds of people running at you going so good.
That's amazing.
We did it one time.
Why
we were
am
playing
I turned
off? We were playing one time and I put like a bunch of mods on, and so I forgot what some of them were. And we were playing, and it was kind of at a quiet moment, and then we just started hearing Smash Mouth play. And it was funny because we were all in the same room and we all looked at each other and had to like, did somebody put an all-star mod? And we didn't know what it was. Turns out that was the music that meant the tank was coming. And the tank was Shrek. And so we all turned around and saw a giant Shrek running at us. All collectively screamed. And then he picks up, instead of throwing rocks, he just throws like donkey at you. And we were like, what the hell is going on? Oh, man.
That's amazing.
It was genuinely terrified because we had that moment like, wait, what is happening?
Oh. See, that's the kind of shit that like Ready Player One gets absolutely wrong.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it was trash. It was absolutely trash. I knew it was. But like basically they've got like, you know, like at the end like they just, you know, pulled like characters from all the genres and all the hero characters pretty much are like helping the good guys or whatever. And really it's not like the real life of like, you know, people modding the like a metaverse game world or whatever is shit like that where like,
yeah,
you know, you're doing something and fucking Shrek comes through the wall. Or Thomas the Tank Engine. Yeah. Did you
the see Resident those mods Evil one? For yeah.
Resident Evil?
The best one for that was the because his name is Mr. X. They just start playing X Gon' Give It To You.
That's
like,
right.
I saw it like breaks through the wall, like knock knock, open up the door.
Oh yeah.
Well, funny enough, that is a perfect transition to my next round. Not Mr. X, but horror games.
Oh yeah.
But a specific kind of a horror game, ones that were available on the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
The golden era of horror games to me.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So Resident Evil 2 initially was on the PlayStation 1, so I'm going to get called out on a technicality there, but there's just so many and the style, I don't know. That's when I think survival horror hit its peak. And you know, I think a lot of people know Silent Hill 2 is being phenomenal. Yeah. But I'd like to give a shout out to Silent Hill 4 because I really liked that one.
Room.
Yeah, and I think some people are kind of iffy about it, but I thought that one was really, really neat and a really weird take on Silent Hill and actually being sort of trapped in that room and having those first person segments. And just, you know, also genuinely horrifying game.
Yeah.
Another one that is really, really great is called Siren, which was after Silent Hill 4, when the developers, like when that development team, I think they're called Team Silent, when they split up, a few of them went and formed a new company and they made a game called Siren, which is really, really interesting. It's definitely more like Japanese than Silent Hill. It has more of like the kind of ghosts and that kind of horror.
Yeah.
But what made that game really unique and really terrifying is it had this mechanic. So a lot of survival horror games, you know, you can't really fight back all that well. You're very
right.
So this one similar. So how do you, you know, hide from creatures and, you know, get out of the way? So this had an ability called sight jacking, which at any moment you could hit a button and your camera, your screen, would turn to a first-person perspective of one of the monsters in the game. God. And you could cycle through all of them. And they would be on, like, a path. And so that was, like, in the very beginning when it kind of teaches you how to use it, there's, like, this monster who's, like, got a sniper rifle up in a tower. And you have to, like, be watching and see when he turns away and then go back to your character and run. And they kind of teach you how to use it. But it's really, really clever and honestly very scary when you... I had one time I was playing it and I was running from some people and I went and I locked the door and I barricaded myself in and I'm like looking through the people. I'm like, okay. And then I see one guy like knocking on a door. I was like, what is this guy doing? And then he kicks the door open and I see me. I was like, oh, fuck. That's... I just went back. It's... Really, I thought that was really neat, and I've never seen anything like that done at all, but that, yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think they made a couple sequels. I only ever played the first one, but yeah, Siren was really cool. And then a couple other, like, quick, obviously Fatal Frame is really great. Haunting Ground, yeah. Rule of Rose. Love all of those. Just PS2 horror needs to make a comeback.
I feel like it. Or is it PS1 horror right now that's doing that?
I think somewhat. I've seen, there's a couple of games I've seen on Steam that are, like, recreating, like, the fixed camera angles and that sort of style.
Like the polygons.
Yeah, so I have not played any of them, so I don't know if they're actually good or if it's just a, hey, you remember Resident Evil?
Yeah. But I think they're small team games largely, too, though.
Yeah, so they could be good. I have not. I did play one, and I forget what it's called, but it was basically like Clock Tower, and it was not very good. Yeah. I mean, horror.
Yeah.
I just want to play Clock Tower.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that was great. I mean, you know, Silent Hill 3, I think, was also really good.
Silent Hill 3 was really good. Yeah. Yeah, she was great.
She was really great. It also, Silent Hill had some of the best endings.
Yes.
Of any games. Like, you could really get some real shitty endings. And I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and I remember I played Silent Hill 3. And, I think this is all the endings, but you beat the final boss. Like, so halfway through the game, like, or early in the game, like, your dad gets killed. Like, her dad gets killed. And so, like, she's going on this, you know, trying to fix everything, figure everything out. And then she finishes the fight with the final boss. And then she just, like, collapses and starts crying about her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking love that.
Yeah.
Like, I really loved seeing and that's a real, you know, I mean, this actually is going right into my next genre. It's a real response. Like, you finish, if you're going through something traumatic, a lot of the time you go through it, you keep going through it. And then when it's over, when you feel that it's over, suddenly you can feel your other feelings again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can experience, then you can mourn, then you can feel the sadness.
Yeah, when the adrenaline dies down.
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, I've killed the monster now. Oh, God. I've written this very specifically for one game, but it Silent Hill actually really applies. But it's games wherein mythology is a metaphor for the human experience, like the mental health for human mental experience.
Okay, yeah.
I think I know what you're gonna say. Yeah. Peanuts 2 Snoopy's Revenge is probably no. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
Of course.
And Silent Hill 2 as well, you know, you've got all these monsters that represent, you know, that was the first game I think where, you know, you've got all these monsters that represent aspects of the main character's psyche fucking coming at him. And that's really what myths and folklore and all that stuff are. They're aspects of the human psyche and self, you know, manifesting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or, you know, manifesting through narrative. And when we tell these stories, you know, it's us learning ourselves, learning about ourselves, learning about our different aspects. So, I mean, Hellblade, one of the best fucking games ever made.
I agree.
And, you know, that experience of having, you know, a character, and Hellblade does a really wonderful, like, Hellblade is so fucking good, you know, where the game itself says it's irrelevant whether or not any of this stuff is quote unquote real,
mm-hmm.
because it's a story. Like the story is real. The story is being told. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just such a powerful, you know, and you just, it's a shame that it kind of really only manifests in like horror and like, you know, tragic genre kind of things. And maybe I just haven't thought about ways that it maybe shows up in more positive ways, but I don't know that it really does with the same intentionality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just such a, I mean, it's what storytelling ultimately originally was, and it's why I don't like so many of the movies and stories and games and stuff that I don't like, because when I look at what the metaphors are, when what, you know, what, when I say, how does the human brain interpret this story? I'm often very dissatisfied and upset. Mm-hmm. It's very often a narrative, you know, it's very often, first of all, like the prevalent one is that violence solves everything, that might makes right. Which is wrong, you know? I mean, it certainly, you know, it has an effect, but, you know, it's not moral righteousness, mm-hmm. you know, because you can kick somebody's ass doesn't make you right. But in movies and games and stories that we tell as a culture these days, it's ubiquitous.
Yeah, well, I think it's that power fantasy. Like, they're not really trying to, you know, tell, like, a story or push that metaphor so much as they're like, hey, you watching this, don't you wish you could kick someone's ass?
Yeah. Dude, have you watched Arcane?
No, I haven't. I heard it's great, though.
Fucking watch it. It's the best thing I've fucking seen, maybe ever.
Nice.
Like, it's so gorgeous. It's so well done. And, I mean, it really touches on exactly what you just said.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I mean, and for me, like, one of the things I realized as I was watching it, as I was finishing it, violence never fucking solves anything. It has an effect, but, like, almost any time the characters engage in violence, whether they win or lose, it doesn't get them what they want. Mm-hmm. And it's very real in a dissatisfying way, or dissatisfying in a real way. And they do a good job, because it's not like the whole show is dissatisfying. Like, you don't go, oh, that was a waste of time. Like it progresses the narrative. But it's so, like, I just love that it's never about, like, oh, you punched the hardest, that means you're a good person. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so fucking good. It's so good. And yeah, I honestly hadn't even connected the power fantasy thing to one of the moments in it until you said it just now. And I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saying, you know, like, yeah. Kind of what you were describing about, like, you know, like, the reminded me of What Remains of Edith Finch.
Oh my god.
Which I really loved.
Yeah.
And a lot of those you know, like, walking simulators are, it's like, I don't know, they're not really that great, but Edith Finch was great because it did that. And I loved that like, all of the stories you would experience of all of the people, how sort of fantastical they were, but you knew what was going on, and just, I don't know, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, the guy in the factory.
I was just going to say, that was, like, and that you're, it's so great, because you're playing, that's what I liked about that game, because it's a story that only worked in that medium. Because when you're playing that, you know, one stick is controlling his fantasy, and then you're using the other stick to, you know, kill the fish.
Do his job.
And then that becomes, like, second nature to you. You're not paying attention to that. And you're like, that is exactly what is happening. And, like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Or the the baby in the bathtub.
Oh, God.
And it just starts playing the classical music, and it's all, you're like, it's so joyful and happy, because that's what that baby would be thinking, and you're just playing like, no, stop.
Oh, God, fucking that game's so good. Mm-hmm.
God, yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right, you got one.
I got my last one. So my last one,
all right,
probably my favorite one. So RPGs, but classic, old, if you will, RPGs.
Like JRPGs?
I do have one JRPG on here, which is Shin Megami Tensei, which that series is really great. And a new one just came out, which I have not played yet, but I probably will soon. But, like I wanted to say CRPGs, but not all of them are CRPGs, but, like, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 specifically being some of my all-time favorite games. Fallout 2 being the video game equivalent of crack cocaine. How much you... And, you know, like, you see a lot of RPGs these days have that illusion of choice that, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want and solve problems the way you want, but it's only a predetermined number of things, or... Or, like, here's the good choice. Here's the bad choice. Fallout 1 and 2, I thought, you know, really where you are figuring things out on your own. And it just... I remember there's a pretty early bit in Fallout 1. So, like, a lot of RPGs these days try and make you the action hero, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a bit in Fallout 1 where I think you can come across, like, a raider tribe. And they're holding some people, like, as slaves. And in a RPG that came out now, I think, you know, like, you could, if you wanted to join them, you'd be evil. But if you wanted to save them, you know, you could talk your way out of it or try and figure out some clever way. Or you just go and blasting and killing them all. And in Fallout 1, you can join them if you want. But if you want to save them, you just have to shoot your way out of there. But that will not happen. Because the combat in that game is very challenging, and it's pretty early on, so you're pretty early level. And I loved that, where you come across that, and you say, I want to do this, but you know, like, you can't. So you have to kind of, you know, weigh that choice, like, well, like, is this going to be worth it? Is it not? Just,
that's
really cool.
Unwinnable scenarios are so fucking cool. Did I ever tell you I applied to BioWare?
Oh, really?
I applied to write for BioWare, and I made a submission, and they were like, oh, yeah, we don't like to give people no-win scenarios. Because basically, I used a scenario from a Star Wars role-playing game that I played solo with my friend, where I'd kind of... It was cool. It was. I mean, we had a lot of fun with it, but it was a no-win scenario. It was like, you do this, and you lose this way, or you do this, and you lose that way. And it's like, you've got, like, it was, you know, one of those, like, no-win moral choices. Mm-hmm. And, they weren't into that. And that's a shame, because I think those are interesting. I think those make for good storytelling.
Yeah, and it puts it, you know, as a player, it's like, yeah, like, you're role-playing as this character, sure. But, yeah, this character presented with a situation. This is how it's going to be. You know, you're not role-playing as, like, a god character, you know. Even in Fallout 2, when you are literally called the Chosen One, it's like, oh, yeah, once you leave your little tribe that doesn't share that belief, you're like, oh, yeah, that the real world's out there, and they don't give a shit.
That schlub.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was something about Fallout 1. I was reading an article where, so there's a town, one of the first towns you come to, there's a sheriff and there's a crime boss, and you got to pick which one.
Yes.
You know this story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like...
Because they were the original version?
Yeah, I love that, and I wish that would have been that, where like, help it, you know, you're like, oh, well, kill the mob boss, help the sheriff, but then if you do that, that's the bad ending for the town.
Yeah, it's the bad ending for the town. Like, the sheriff ends up becoming like kind of a totalitarian figure, like ruling through force and like, you know, law and all that stuff, whereas the mob boss ends up having to, like, it's like this Al Swearengen kind of thing, where he has to, like, you know, start becoming like a pillar of the fucking community, and it kind of ends up being more beneficial for the town. And that shit's like, that shit happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's like the way that we think the world should work doesn't end up always working. We do things that we think are the right thing to do, and they don't end up fucking working the way that, you know, they should.
One of the, like, Fallout 2, like, the area of New Reno is one of the coolest locations, I think, in video games. And it's sort of funny, because it sort of later shows up in New Vegas as, like, New Vegas, but... Because New Reno essentially is the same thing, but it's divided, I think it's four different crime families. Yeah. And, you know, none of, interacting with them has absolutely nothing to do with the main story, but you just kind of come in and you figure out, like, who's in charge of what and who rules certain ways and who does what. And then you can kind of, like, help them, and... If you play both sides, you can do that for a little while, but then if they find out, like, you'll be fucking executed on sight. Like, yeah, you're like, what do you think is going to happen if you try and go behind a powerful mob boss, you know? Yeah. I remember I had to reset a save, because I went into one and I ended up talking with the lady who ended up being, like, one of the mob boss's wives. And you, like, talk with her, and you find out obviously he's horrible to her, and you can, like, if you have high enough charisma, you end up sleeping with her. Uh-huh. But when you do that, you wake up on, like, the third floor, and on the third floor, the only thing there is, like, that bedroom, and then the mob boss having a meeting, and you have to go to the stairs to get down. And to do so, you pass by him and he's like, what the fuck are you doing up here? And and there's really no way to talk your way out. You're like, yeah, that would happen if I had sex with the mob boss's wife, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, and I kept trying to get out. I'm like, yep, nope, I fucked up.
Oops.
But yeah, I love stuff like that. And just, I don't know, like you were mentioning math earlier, and it's not necessarily math, but like a lot of like, because a lot of those games are just running numbers in the background, you know? Yeah. And I love that, like all the stats and stuff like that. And of course, another one I want to briefly mention, because I know we both are big fans of this, is Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Oh my God, yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Were you bringing up the stats to say that in those kinds of games, the stats don't necessarily tell you what's about to happen?
Exactly, yeah. That's another thing. Like, you have, say you got high speech. Like, well, here's the button to get what you want right now. I liked about Vampire, it had, you know, like, persuade, intimidate, seduce. And none of those necessarily guaranteed anything. You sort of had to read the situation and the character and know what was best to happen. And, yeah, really neat.
Yeah, really smart games, really. I mean, and that kind of shit is hard to do.
Of course.
But it's, I mean, that's how you end up with games that people still talk about 20 years later.
Exactly, yeah. Did you ever play Gothic?
No, I didn't.
That's an older one. I think there's a couple of them. But that was another one that was really cool. I can't remember the exact reason how it happened, but it's more like fantasy setting. And essentially, a huge part of the world gets like sectioned off and becomes like a prison. And so the whole thing is set in this prison. And the prisoners become the prison guards, and it's divided into factions and things like that. But it's got really good realistic writing, because it sort of imagines like this is sort of what would happen. Or there's a pretty early quest where you know you go to an area and a guy approaches you. He's like, hey, like, you know, it's dangerous up there. You better, you know, pay me and I'll watch your back, you know, like you see in a lot of those games. And, you know, of course, you're like, no, fuck off. And then, you know, you go through and you find, and then you end up talking to like one of the guards, and you get like a quest to go do something. And you follow that quest and you go somewhere, and it's that guy that you first met and a couple of other dudes, and they jump you and beat you up. And they're like, pay your tax when you're here. Like, you're on our turf now. You're like, oh, that quest was a trick because I didn't pay this other guy. Like, of course he's bribing the guards to turn their back. I'm like, huh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's, damn, yeah.
You also smoke a lot of weed in that game, which is really funny. They're like a religious group of people, and like they use a lot of different pot, and it's funny because they openly admit, they're like, yeah, most people are joining this just for the free pot, but you know, I was like, this is great.
Nice.
Anyway, so yeah, and there's, you know, countless more examples of that kind of thing, but that's my last genre and probably my favorite type of game ever.
Nice. I mean, that's a good one. My last genre is multi-genre games. I really love a game, and this started with ActRaiser for me.
Mm-hmm.
I really love a game that has multiple ways that you interact with it when you're in different situations. You know, with ActRaiser, it's platforming, you know, for the battle scenarios, and then it's a top-down, you know, village sim.
Mm-hmm.
For the village building. I mean, I just, that's like my favorite thing in any game when I get to do multiple things. Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, when I got, you know, it's a third person, you know, action platformer, but there are space battles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Grand Theft Auto has all kinds of like little mini games throughout. What Remains of Edith Finch is a walking simulator, but you have all these different situations where the way that you interact with the game totally changes. And I think that's just one of the most extraordinary things about the medium of video games. And it's what makes video games unique, because excuse me, no matter what's going on in a movie, you are watching a movie. You take it in the same way. You interact with it in the same way. You know, same with music. You know, you could have lights on, you could have the bass up so you can feel it or whatever, but ultimately, like, throughout a single piece, like, you don't change the way you interact with it. And for a video game, like, it's just so cool. I love it. It makes it more immersive. It makes it more interesting to me. Like, just anything, like, where anything becomes a mini game, within a game, it's just the coolest fucking thing, I think.
I'm inclined to agree. I watched a review of somebody talk about the Yakuza games, because those are just chock full of, like, all kinds of shit you can do. And they're like, yeah, it's kind of interesting because I don't really want to ever spend money on, like, a billiards game or a bowling game or, you know, like a dancing rhythm game. Yeah. But all of those things exist in this game, and that's, like, my favorite thing to do, you know? I was like, yeah, it's just so weird, like, how that is. Like, if you could, you know, mini game collection, like, that sounds lame, but when you wrap it around something like that, or like you say with, you know, GTA, that's always, like, I'm always amazed with, like, things like that where it's almost like, why the hell would anybody do this, but it's there, that makes it interactive, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, you know, I'm already playing a game, and then for my character in the game to be playing another game is weirdly more immersive. But also, like, you know, I guess that's also slightly different too than kind of me playing the game and then me playing a different aspect of the game in a different genre.
Yeah.
As well. There's kind of, but yeah, it just blew my mind with ActRaiser. I've always loved it ever since. And it's just such a fun way, you know, to do things. There was Master Blaster, is the same thing, where it's a side platformer, and then you would go into the rooms and it would become a top-down game. There was this really cool, like, fucking Godzilla game. It may have also been really fucking terrible, and it was on the NES, and it was like a hex map game, and you'd, like,
I remember this game.
And you'd, like, plot your move on the board game map. You'd be like, all right, I move here, 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 and you move these spaces. And then you would have to play, like, side view. You'd have to play through those environments to get your character to where they were going. And I love that. I thought that was the coolest. I don't understand why that isn't in more games.
Yeah.
When I fantasize about making games, that is very often, like, a mechanic that I think just makes sense. It's like you plan the movement and then you, like, play through the movement, and it just would be fun and interesting.
That's what I thought was really cool about Hand of Fate.
Oh my god. You're just
playing a card game and strategy, but then, like, oh yeah, you encounter these guys and then you fight them. I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I didn't play the first one much at all, but the second one is
so good.
One of the best games ever.
So good.
That one is that's a perfect because you've oh my god, they fucking they changed the dynamics of how that game works so many different ways throughout the game. Like, even the card game you're playing changes fundamentally from level to level.
I love that. Like, I think, like, there's the one where you get cursed and so you can't eat food anymore.
You eat food but it won't heal
you. And it just, that changes how you play the entire thing, like, or the ones where it's, because sometimes it's linear, there's one where I think it's, like, your town, so it's just a grid of cards, and you're, like, you know, like, you're running out of time, like, ah, so good.
Yeah, that company's no longer around, and that's really sad.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
That is one of the best, and the writing on that was so clever and cool, and it was such a cool, fun, interesting game. It was so good. Hand of Fate 2, and it would have the mini games where it's like, all right, you need to stop the pendulum at the right spot.
Yeah, that's right.
To, like, stop the wheel, and you'd have to get good at those fucking mini games, and, like, you'd know, like, you'd balance, like, you're like, all right, I gotta do this, can I do that mini game, how good am I at that? Such a phenomenal game, like, just absolutely one of the best games ever made. Yeah,
I agree.
Shining example.
I've not played this one, so I can't attest to its quality, but I I'm gonna bring it up because I'm gonna forget otherwise, but I wanted to play it with you because it seems like when you play with people, but it's on the Quest, and it's
Okay.
called, I think it's called like Demo or something like that, but it's a
Okay.
board game. So you're in virtual reality and you play a board game, but you're like you put your like, you know, your piece there and then you roll and then your character will come alive and actually like walk through. And so you're doing virtual reality, you're playing your cards and things like that, but you're kind of watching the action unfold like as if it were playing in front of you. And I think you can do some of the controls. I don't know. It looks
Okay.
interesting. It might be shit, but
All
I'd be
right,
curious to
I'm
play
willing.
with you because it seems like a cool idea for VR, like a board game that, you know, comes alive.
Yeah, that would be I'm into
Yeah.
that. Let's try it.
Same Hand of Fate, just and like the cards, that just reminded me of that. Like, oh yeah, I
Yeah.
want to play that. Anyway,
Yeah.
but yeah, that is really cool. That's also a good like last one.
Yeah. Well, this has been our first list episode with Jared.
Yay!
Yay! We hope that you enjoyed the show. You can always chat with us at Devolver or discord.gg/devolverdigital, and you can go to the Fortcast channel and let us know what you thought. Thanks to everybody for chatting in there, letting us saying our goodbyes to Robbie and our hellos to Jared. It's so we appreciate you guys y'all chatting in there. Yeah. Jared, have you heard of Twitter?
Twitter, I believe so. Do we have one of
It's
those?
an anxiety website, and you can go on there
That
to develop anxiety, and also see snarky comments from Devolver Digital at Devolver Digital on Twitter. We're at Devolver, we're twitch.tv/DevolverDigital, at Devolver PA on Twitter for Twitch related Devolver tweets. We're on TikTok, Instagram. We're doing our best to be everywhere all the time. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. Or
Bye.
hear you. Well, you'll hear us next week. Bye.